CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
All right, well, it being 3:15, I'll go ahead and get started. Good afternoon. Right on cue, right? Excellent. Welcome to Supercharging Fusebox Project Management. My name is Jeff Peters, for those of you I don't know, and there are a few of you yet. So this, the largest yet, CF United. We just keep getting bigger every year, so glad to see everybody here. Just a quick poll so I know where you're coming from. How many of you are presently using Fusebox? Yay. How many of you are program managers or project managers, team managers of some variety? Good. How many of you want to be? Oh, come on. Trust me, I know the feeling. I'd rather be writing code than managing a project. It's true. Okay, for all of you that are using Fusebox, how many are on Fusebox 4? Excellent. Okay. A lot of what we're going to look at today, after we get done talking a little bit about why we do project management, focuses specifically on the capabilities that we have based on Fusebox 4. So if you haven't looked at 4 yet, and believe me, there are still some folks out there, it's a good time to do so. 5 is coming real soon now. Haven't talked with Sean recently, so I'm not real sure exactly when, but should be coming out soon. Did he release put one out today? Excellent. All right. See, I haven't talked with him today, so excellent. Good news. So what are we going to talk about today? We'll talk a little bit just about what is project management in terms of the world's expectations for project management, why we do it, and then a little bit about why is Fusebox good for project management, and then, of course, some cool tools, because I can't speak anywhere without cool tools. It's just force of habit. So what is project management? Essentially, boiled down to the bottom, it's nothing more than keeping track of time and money. So these are the things that affect our projects, and the things that when we have clients, be they consulting customers or contracting clients, or if we work in an IT department, it's the company that we serve, they always have questions. What's it going to cost, and when's it going to be done? So project management is basically knowing the answers to those questions. So when we're talking about time, we have a couple of issues: budgeted time and actual time. I'm not going to get really into a lot of the formalized discussion of project management and all of the zoo of acronyms that fly around that, just because they all boil down to these basic concepts. When talking about time in terms of budget, we're talking about what will be done, first of all. So what's the scope of the project? What are we going to actually construct? So we got to get that defined. When will it be done? So how long is it going to take? Both in terms of man hours and calendar time, what's going to affect this project in terms of proceeding with getting it done, and how long will it take, okay? How long will it take as opposed to when will it be done? How long is more in terms of counting the number of hours, and how does that add up to, turns into money. Time is money, right? So everybody knows that. In terms of actuals, when it gets down to it, it's what actually was done, as opposed to what did we plan on doing. Plans and reality very seldom meet at the end, right? So in a perfect world, it would be so. When was it done? So by the time we got done actually doing the work and we had to deal with, for example, I'm having a deck built in my backyard right now, and I just got a call less than an hour ago that the county inspector came out to inspect our post holes, which were dug last week, and they were supposed to come out last week. But what's been happening for the last 4 days? Torrential downpours. So we get a failure notice on the inspection that says the holes are full of mud and water. I said, oh, thank you. If you'd come out last week, well, anyway. So these kinds of things impact our projects. You know, beyond our control, everybody's got some other conflict. And project management is about coordinating all of that little silliness that comes along the way. And how long did it actually take? So we said it was going to require 10 hours to write some chunks of code, and it actually added up to 12. So we run a cost overrun from some perspective. When we talk about ideal time versus calendar time, what we plan versus what really comes out the other end, the difference we refer to as slack time, right? So when we're all slacking, how many people get the reference? All right, good. It's not totally wasted, but anyway, you're a slacker, McFly, a slacker. When we're talking about money, same deal. Budget versus actual, right? So it's budgeted money is what will it cost, and this is what we're saying, this is what it'll cost, right? And when it gets down to finishing the project, this is what it did cost, right? How many people have worked on that project? Good, okay. Project management doesn't matter. Unless you want a happy customer, unless you want to get paid without a fuss, that's my favorite. I always like to have those checks without arguing over them. And unless you want a strong reputation. This last one is probably the most important from my perspective. One of the pieces of feedback that I get a lot from other developers as well as customers is it's also organized. You know, oh, you do these things just so and so and so. And it took me a long time to realize that not everybody does things this way. And the fact that I do means that when I put something in a customer's hand and it is well organized and a project is all laid out, they have a great roadmap. Speaking of roadmaps, how many of you have seen the Fusebox roadmap PDF file that's on my site, one or two? Just a little thing that I threw together, a front and back pamphlet that you can print out, use for your customers, and it's literally just a management level roadmap of what the Fusebox process is about, what the flip life cycle is about. Really good to put in their hand and just say, this is where I'm taking you. So as we progress through the project, you'll be able to see each of these milestones occur. This is what makes customers happy, that you tell them what's going to happen before it happens, and then as it's happening, you say, remind them along the way. This is what we said we're going to do, and this is now we are doing it. Words to live by, I toss this in here. The guy with the most answers wins. And this is true in almost every situation. Richard L. Williams, who, if you haven't heard of him, was a policy advisor to five of our presidents up through Bush 41. So he's kind of been around a little bit and made this comment at one point. And the more I think about it, the more situations I apply it to it, the truer it gets. You know, anytime I walk into a meeting, anytime I walk into anywhere, if I've got answers to all the questions, then I'm the hero, right? So that's one of my primary objectives when it comes to project management in general. So why Fusebox? What's the point? Why is Fusebox good for program management? What do you guys think? Any ideas about, what, in your experience, why has it been good for you from a, maybe just from a coding perspective, but maybe from a project perspective? Any thoughts and ideas? Now's when you have to wake up. Yeah. Lets you use different resources on different project parts of the project without overwalk. Excellent, good point.
I don't use Fusebox, but I use Mach 2.
Mach 2.
One of the things that I see an advantage of something like that is you can go ahead and define all of your views and have your views sitting out there kind of dumb, and then be able to at least prototype based on that.
Right, so frameworks let you determine what it is that you're going to do before you do it. And again, kind of laying out that roadmap. Yeah, great point. Documentation is built in. Oh, are you going to love the rest of this session? I'll show you some stuff that'll really make things fun for you. Yeah, great point.
One of the big things we do is setting client expectations, you know, with prototyping the interface.
Client expectations. What a phrase. Client expectations. Do you know what they are? Do you know what your client? No, seriously. Do you know what your client's expectations are?
Do they?
Better question. You know, when Hal Helms and I talk, frequently we say, clients don't know what they want until they see it, right? And so that's why the Fusebox prototyping phase is so wonderful, because without doing all of the heavy lifting behind the scenes, it lets us sit down and have a visual conversation with the customer that says, is this what you want? Yeah, there's somebody else that had a, yeah.
I was just going to say it allows you to break down your project into really small pieces, so then it helps you to get better
granularity of the project so that you can better estimate what it is that you have to do. Yeah, excellent point. The more stuff that you write, the more you get a feel for how much a small piece of code is going to take in terms of time to code the thing. And then if you can just put together a whole collection of little numbers, it adds up to a big number, and all of a sudden your estimate is really accurate. So yeah, that's a great thing. All in the back. Code reuse and saving time because you're reusing code. Yeah, another great point. Okay, anything else? Super, okay. So all of these things are good ideas about why frameworks in general and Fusebox in particular are good things to do for us. And I, obviously you all showed up in this room today, so you already kind of have a feel for what Fusebox is about and what it's good for. I say it's good for organization, and most of all, organization. Why is that word so important? For all of the reasons that all of you just stated. What Fusebox lets me do as a program manager is focus on the thing that I need to know right now. So it gives me the answer that I need. If everything's organized, then I have the answers to those questions when my customer comes to me and says, where are we, or what do we do next, or how far along are we? What percentage of this project is done? Well, if the project consists of 2,000 fuses and we've written 1,400 of them, we have a pretty good idea, don't we? Now, some of them are going to be bigger than others, but that's a pretty good metric, a good way to keep track of things and answer that thing. Another thing is FLIP, the Fusebox lifecycle process, organizes the lifecycle, and somebody touched on that just a couple minutes ago, where we have well-defined phases in the process. So when we're talking with the customer, we're dealing with that roadmap, we can talk about what's going to happen. We have recognizable beginning and end of each phase, so we know when they start, we know when they end, and we can communicate that to the customer. Okay, you've seen the roadmap, we've finished wireframing, and now we're going to do prototyping. And we go through the whole prototyping process, and they know what's going to happen when we get to the end of it, and the goal that we're looking for is prototype freeze. So that's a goal we're working with together with the customer, and they're well aware of it. So we also have these discreetly manageable chunks. So we can take advantage of skill sets on our team for each portion of it. Okay, so FLIP also organizes the tasks, and this is kind of the point that I was just on, is that the people that you have working on your team all have different skill sets, right? Different experience. One of the things that I constantly reminding myself of and folks when I come to these conferences, the great thing about the Cold Fusion world in general is that almost nobody that's doing Cold Fusion started out as a programmer. You know, very few people did. Almost everybody came from some other background. So we've got, you know, accountants, economists. I have a good friend that I met, some years ago, that got into Cold Fusion just so that he could better run his office. He's a neurosurgeon, you know? So we have an extraordinary breadth of expertise in things other than programming in the Cold Fusion world. This is very wealthy for us as developers. We get a team together, that means we're going to have all kinds of different capabilities that we can take advantage of. So we're going to have somebody who's really good at talking to customers and has come from maybe a sales role or something where they're really good at doing that aspect of things. So we can organize a business process. We can take advantage of people that are more business-oriented to do those tasks where they're talking with the customer. If we have someone that's a designer and, you know, maybe actually came out of a hard graphic design house and moved into the digital world, and now we've got them caught up in our web team, and they can be very effective in the design process, architecture process. We're not really doing any coding yet, and some people really have a head for organizing a system and designing what the architecture is supposed to look like. Coding, of course, lots of folks like to just slap on the headphones and leave me alone while I write my code. You know, so that's a great thing too. And testing. How many of you people have a dedicated tester on your team? Cool. Very good. Really easy to find, aren't they? Good testers are like gold. I have the one that works for me now has been with me for several years now, and this woman can break anything. Anything. And for that, it's great, because by the time it gets past her and she signs off on it, I know that it's going to be really good for our customers. And then deployment specialists, again, working in foreign environments, dealing with customer spaces and other systems and all of that kind of stuff where you have to worry about walking on other people's toes in terms of who has what space on a server or in a rack or in whatever environment, and they can deal with all of those kinds of issues as well. So we can really take advantage of different talents on our team, right? Fusebox as a code framework organizes our code too, right? And we mentioned that a little bit earlier. We have all these small granular modules that we deal with, and they're different types of code. So we have separation of the kinds of coding that happen. So even among our coders, we've got design types or people that are really good with HTML and CSS and that kind of stuff, then they'll do our displays for us. And then we have database gurus. Who's a database guru in here? I grew up in the database world, so I came out of database application development, and talk about standing me on my head. You know, Flip is sort of the totally antithesis of database application design, which says the database rules the world. And in Fusebox and Flip, we say exactly the other, that database is the last thing on our mind. But at some point, you've got to have somebody that can take that whole logical framework of the application and turn it into a data model, an effective data model for whatever data environment that we're working in. And so queries in there. And then our action type folks who are you know, process oriented, who are really good at thinking about how to do something efficiently. We're talking more and more these days about doing async processes and things like that. So folks that think along those lines are really good in that kind of point. And I say et cetera for local conventions, because of course Fusebox is kind of open in terms of how it allows you to define modules. So if in your shop you've defined things other than displays, queries, and actions, which you're perfectly welcome to do, then you can apply the talents of your team to those aspects of things as well. As long as you're consistent, right? Because the rule is consistency within your shop. FuseDoc, yeah, go ahead. I do not currently. I've flirted with some here and there. At one point, I kind of thought that it would be reasonable to have one that was a form convention, FRM for forms. And I was thinking about kind of encapsulating everything that forms need to do in one file and doing that sort of recurse on itself kind of approach. And I decided I really didn't like it because it made things too big and wasn't granular enough. So I abandoned that one. And at one point, we had a convention that we put layout files in a different prefix and kind of arrived at the conclusion that they're just display files, so there isn't really any point in making the distinction there. So right now I don't. I find the general categories are really good buckets. But I do know Fuseboxers that have, you know, 5, 6, 7 local extensions that they use. So what works for you works for you, for your team. The only caveat I have about it is if you do that, then when you come to conferences and things and you're talking with other Fuseboxers, you have to explain your conventions to them. So that being said, FuseDoc, then, we've talked a little bit about Flip, about the process, about Fusebox as a framework. FuseDoc is another bit of organization, and it organizes the coding, right? So we document what the Fuse is going to be before we do it. So the FuseDoc exists as the blueprint for that module of code. So it's all nicely organized and tells us how we're going to do things. How many of you actually FuseDoc before you build an application? Very good. Congratulations. All of you should be doing this. The thing about doing FuseDocs that is, it's freeing in a way, is it forces you to think about the application outside the context of actually writing code and trying to make code work. Okay, so it makes you think more at the theoretical process level and the data that needs to move through the application as opposed to exactly how you're going to make it work. So if you haven't done it, give it a try. Do those FuseDocs beforehand, and hopefully a little bit later in the session I'm going to give you some more incentive to do exactly that. Yeah? That's correct. The FuseDoc as a documentation standard can be used regardless of whether you use Fusebox. So, in fact, I find it very useful in everything that I'm writing in CF, whether it's Fusebox or otherwise. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. FuseDoc is not in any way tied to Fusebox. Its name came from the fact that at the time he devised the concept, Hal had his head completely in Fusebox, and so out it came. The properties section rules in Fusedox. Okay. Property section is really powerful because you can use it for practically any purpose you want in capturing information that isn't formalized elsewhere in the Fusedoc. Okay, so you have notes, history, and property tags that you can use within the properties section. The property tag in particular can be quite powerful. How many of you use it at all in your Fusedox? One, two, three, a few, okay. So what you can do with a property tag is set a property with any name you want and give it a value. So it's just like setting attributes in a tag, a custom tag, for example. So you can set up properties for, maybe to identify who's the team lead for a particular piece of work that you're doing, or who has final approval authority on your team, or something like that. Whatever you want to do with those properties within your code, you can really take advantage of them. Primarily because there's no limits on what you can capture there in the data. So we get all this stuff in Fusedox primarily, and also in the XML files elsewhere in a Fusebox 4 application. And the thing we're going to focus on a little bit more as well as Fusedox is the circuit.xml file. You have all this descriptive data that talks about the application. So now we want to, as project managers, we want to be able to do something with it, right? Because it's data that's sitting there. Primarily, it was designed for the use of, in the case of the CircuitXML files, for use by the application framework, right, by the Fusebox core files. And in the case of the Fusedox, by your coders. So it's communication method between the architect and the coders. But we can use it for a lot more than that because it's XML, right? So how many of you are tinkering with XML now? Good. Anybody done XSL transformations? Cool. You'll like this stuff too. For the rest of you, you'll get into it a little bit because I'll give you some things that'll make it fun. So I have a couple of tools that are available from my site at grokfusebox.com, G-R-O-K, fusebox.com. If you visit there and drop into the Grok's Goodies section, there's a whole bunch of freebies you can download. And the two tools that we're looking at today are in there. The first one is Fusedoc Miner. All this thing does is cruise through the hierarchy of your Fusebox application, peeks into each fuse, pulls out the Fusedoc, and runs an XSL transformation with a specified style sheet against that Fusedoc, adds the output to a common report output, and gives it back to you. Okay? So depending on how you create a style sheet with it, you can use the default one that comes with it, or you can write your own style sheets. You can turn that Fusedoc data into any format you want to output things. So here's how it works, right? We have all of the Fusedocs that are collected in the application. And it's important to recognize that this can be before you've written any code, right? So the application is architected, the Fusedocs are written, you haven't even started writing code yet. So you've still got a lot of information about where you're going with the project. You're in the planning stage. Then you have an XSL style sheet, and what Fusedoc Miner does is it takes those two things, and for each Fusedoc, it applies the style sheet and adds that to the finished report. If it finds any errors along the way, it gives you that in the browser output. Okay, so your finished report is a file that gets written to the drive, and any errors come out in the browser. Okay, so now we'll take a look at it a little bit. Anybody know what this is? The fact that we're talking about a miner should give you a little bit of a hint. Nobody's seen one of these? This is a boring bit, yeah. And actually, what's fun about it is if you had a person standing in here, they'd be about that tall. These are the things that they use to bore the tunnel. And they're so huge, they bore the tunnel and they leave it in place when they're done. They just abandon it underground. Anyway, fun trivia. All right, so we'll go back to this in a second. The first thing we want to look at, anybody looked at the We Got Widgets reference application for Fusebox? You know this? Okay. If you haven't seen it before, all it is an application you can download from fusebox.org. It is what we call a reference application, which is just to say an application that we all can use so that when we talk about issues, we know that we're looking at the same thing. Okay, so you can download it at your convenience if you want to use it for your own speaking. So FuseDoc Miner, let me show you the call to this real quick first. This is really complex stuff. Can everybody see that? That's probably not the best way to look at it. Let me try it this way. Come on, wake up. There we go. A little bit better. Ooh, tough call, isn't it? So it's just a custom tag, and the only thing that we're feeding it is where the directory that we want it to start in. So it's going to start in that directory and go down through any subdirectories it finds, and it'll recurse the entire directory tree. All right. So that said, we'll go back over, and we'll see what happens when we run it. FuseDoc Miner. Really exciting, huh? Okay, this is not telling us a whole awful lot. I'll show you, what it's actually telling us is success. Okay, I'll show you why in just a moment. But more importantly, let's go in here and look at this file, fusedocminer output.html. If we take a peek at that, this is what we get. Who mentioned documentation earlier? Is this not great? Which would you rather? Sit for 3 weeks in an office and read FuseDocs and pound out documentation for things, or run this thing and have it all available for you? Okay, so you can generate system documentation just that quickly. Okay, what you get out here is entirely up to you based on what you put in the style sheet. So this is just what the default style sheet generates. You want to create your own style sheets, you can have it output whatever you like to do. This is a format that we like to use, and we just print it out, stick it in a binder, and that way we have it available for reference, and I can put it in a customer's hand, and it's weighty and says, you know, we're actually doing stuff. Okay, this is what we plan on doing. All right. And we can see in here, if you just wanted to back check some things, you can see that we've got DSP product form and DSP catalog. If we go into the application, here's DSP catalog, and there's the FuseDoc for it. So we can say, let's find something like, in the IO, we've got a record set that's query get catalog. Where was that DSP catalog? And so here's that record set down here. Okay, so we know that we're creating that record set as part of it, so we get a very descriptive thing. We throw all this out on a color printer, and wow, wonderful. System documentation in a heartbeat, right? Good. What else could you do with it? Pretty much anything your heart desires based on the data that's in FuseDocs. So if you think about the data points that are captured in there, your IO section, those properties that I mentioned earlier, which are really where things get important. If you start capturing within the properties the things that are important for you to track as a program manager, then you get your documentation out in whatever format that you'd like to have it in. And make your customers happy. Yes, question?
Do you use this like a bug tracker,
like when you correct something? Let me address that really briefly too. Let's say we saw that thing worked fine. And keeping in mind that we can use this before or after code happens. Let's say that we had an error in the XML in our FuseDoc. Okay, so I didn't close the out tag there correctly. Okay, and this is in DSP catalog. If I had run that, I mentioned the error report to the browser. So it tells us right here the element type out has to be terminated by matching end tag. Messed up, you don't have an end tag in there. Okay, so when you're writing FuseDocs, quite often as you're cruising through things, you'll leave out things like, you know, trailing slashes or, you know, an end tag or something like that. Obviously, those things all have to be in order for tools like this to work. So FuseDoc Miner helps you ferret out those things as well. So what you'll get here is every error that it catches as it goes through, you'll just get a report. You can go back through, correct XML, and then run it to get your output. In a successful generated file. Okay? The big question that comes out of this, of course, is if you're using this post-coding to document a finished system, for example, what if my coders don't update the fuse docs? Well, you know, this is like saying, what if my coders don't write comments in their code, right? It's a deficiency. So it's kind of up to the manager to be encouraging coders to keep up with things. So when you make changes to a module, that it gets reflected. In a perfect world, the fuse docs don't get changed, right? The code gets written according to the fuse docs and everything's just so. Real world things do affect fuse docs from time to time. So the question you have to ask yourself as the manager is, if I'm going to change a fuse doc, why am I changing it? And is it because we missed something to start with, or because something in the environment changed that we have to make a change to the fuse docs? So something else for the manager to stay on top of. Okay, FP4 checklister. Excuse me. FP4 checklister is a similar tool. But instead of pulling out fuse docs, it operates on the circuit.xml files within an application. So this is one that I like to use, and the original concept and the name for the thing came out of the fact that it was built initially to create checklists that I can use to go through, and as I get work back from coders, I can check it off literally on a checklist to see which modules have been coded, so which fuse actions are done, so which circuits are done, and so forth. So that's why it's FP4 checklister. It's really a misnomer because, as you'll see, we can do anything we want with the style sheets. It just happens that the default style sheet that came with it creates checklists for us. Okay. So in case you haven't looked at one recently, here's a sample circuit.xml file, and it just captures the fuse actions within the circuit. And in particular, what I'm interested in terms of the checklister are the includes, okay, because they're going to tell us which fuses contribute to this particular fuse action, right? So what things have to be coded in order for a fuse action to work. So this is what the checklister looks for, is the include nodes within the checklist. So let's take a look at how that works. Once again, the call to it is ridiculously simple. Okay, same thing. Now, there are optional parameters. So there's a secondary parameter. If you don't want to use the default style sheet, you can specify your own style sheet. Okay, so all included in the README files for it. So when you download the zip file, then it's in there for you. And when we run that, before checklister, we get this output. Okay, so again, just pulling out the circuit.xmls, and all this is a checklist, and I don't know how well you can see it, but what we have here is the name of the circuit at the top of the section, and then here I have name of fuse action, show new product form, and add product, and then the fuses that contribute, so DSP product form here, act upload file, and query new product here. And then I just formatted the table according to my desire as a manager for the things that I want to be able to check off as I go. I have date coded by, unit test date, tested by. Okay, so I can print this out, throw it on a clipboard, and just be making notes on things as I go along. I can copy and paste it into a spreadsheet if I want to keep it in a spreadsheet. I can do, you know, any of a variety of things. Obviously, based on that, yeah, quick question. Right, so you're right. This implementation, the checklister, only deals with circuit.xml. Right? So it's not looking for those details. Could you do something that did that where you kind of married the checklister with FuseDoc Miner? Absolutely. Obviously, we're dealing with XML, and so it's very easy to come up with something that will extract that specific data and put it together for you. Yeah, kind of the sky's the limit here. And that's sort of what everything that you'll find on grokfusebox.com is kind of geared towards getting you started on a concept and then offering you something that you can take and run with and build your own stuff so that it becomes a great and powerful thing for you. And if you do that, email me and let me know what you've done with it, because I really enjoy hearing from directions that other folks go based on those little tidbits. These are really basic tools that are kind of one-purpose focus, but hopefully what they do in terms of your grabbing them and taking a look at them is start some ideas going like that. You know, what a great idea to kind of put the concepts together so that the report you get back out gives you everything that's in there. The context that I use the checklister in is before any of the coding has started. Okay, so I run it once and then I just, you know, keep updating it as things come in myself. Certainly it would be a wonderful thing is if I establish local conventions that say when you code the thing, you add into the properties section who you are, when you did it, and when it was coded. So it gets dropped into the development framework, then I can rerun this same utility and get all those updates. Yeah, great idea. It would be a very cool thing to do. Okay, so at any rate, again, based on a style sheet, you can do whatever kind of output with this that you want. So as long as the data that you're after is in the circuit.xml files, then you can present it any way you want to, as far as generating browser output and whether you want it for printed or, you know, if you're inclined that direction, you could create, all kinds of output. Where do we go from here? Write your own style sheets. Anybody done any XSL style sheet stuff? I know I got one and a few others. Okay, good. XSL is one of those things that it works best, I believe, to look at some examples and kind of take them apart and try some things on your own, modify existing style sheets and see what you get. To that end, the style sheets that exist in FuseDoc Minor and FP4 Checklister are really straightforward. They're pretty simple, not complex style sheets at all. So you can modify them, create copies of them and modify them to change how they behave and get a handle on what this whole XSL thing is about. There's definitely a light bulb moment involved in XSL where you'll kind of work with it for a while and then all of a sudden things will start making sense. And then you'll start experimenting with, I want to do some really complex stuff like putting these things all together and pulling out the data points and so forth. I strongly encourage you to do so and play with them. So these two utilities, very simple style sheets, not a lot of complexity in them, so hopefully you'll find them to be really effective playgrounds. You might want to generate reports with them like I do here through the browser, create your own formats. You might want to create data to import into other tools. Okay, when you perform the transformation, with the XML transform function in ColdFusion, what you get out is just data, and what you do with that is up to you. So if you create it, you could create a style sheet to maybe build input that you can import into Microsoft Project. I'm not a huge project user, so I haven't really attempted that, but that would be kind of a cool thing if you were in a shop where you have to use Project as a project management tool to pull all that data out of the existing application and have it applied to your presentation, your Gantt charts, and so forth in Project. Or if you deal with things in spreadsheets, maybe you can drop them into spreadsheets. The checklist formats that I use, you can actually just copy and paste into a spreadsheet and use them that way if you want to. Or what do you need? Really, that's what it's all about, is answering the questions, right? So the guy with the most answers wins. Okay, cool. All right, so questions and hopefully answers. What's out there? You're all totally convinced this is the way to go. You can't wait to go home and download these things. Yeah?
FuseDoc Minor.
Mm-hmm. Good question. It defaults to looking for the three FuseBox prefixes, .cfm. You can alter the list of prefixes for local conventions. So there is an added parameter, and that's in the README, that you can update it so that it will look for whatever file specification that you instruct it to look for. So, yeah, you can use wildcards and all that stuff. So.
With the checklist, it looks like you're monitoring individual fuses.
Mm-hmm. How involved am I in monitoring individual fuse coding milestones? Okay, totally depends on the project, on the size of the thing. Smaller projects, then I'm monitoring everything. So I want to know when everything comes back in, and I'm keeping track of the whole thing. On a larger project, typically what I have is spheres of responsibility for a set of circuits that are delegated to members of my team that are kind of sub-managers, and so they'll keep track of everything, and I just ask them from time to time, you know, what's your status on, what percentage of fuses do you have done for that circuit, and then I can aggregate that into just kind of an overall reflection of where the project is. So totally depends on the size of the thing. One of the nice things about using tools like this is it lets you be hands-on without being really intrusive to the folks that are doing the work. You're not always pinging somebody on the head and saying, you know, when are you going to finish? How many have got done? What's, you know, that kind of stuff. So good for monitoring without really being a pain to your team. Yeah?
I've played with Fusebox, but not used it in anger. So could you say a little bit about how Fusebox helps with the problems of poorly defined requirements and late-based requirements?
Sure. How does Fusebox help with the problems of poorly defined requirements? This is really the question that Fusebox grew up to answer. Okay, so the problem, as I mentioned earlier, is that customers don't know what they want until they see it. Okay, so what Fusebox does, and more accurately, what the Fusebox lifecycle process does, is arrange development tasks kind of in increasing order of expensive change. So we start out in a wireframe scenario where everything is just defining business process, finding out what we want the application to do, the steps that we need to go through. No look and feel, no, we just have basically business process stuff. It's very quick and easy to change, very inexpensive to change. Okay? The next step, the prototyping phase or the front end phase, as we are calling it more and more these days to avoid the loaded term prototype, is then occupies itself with how the thing is going to look and feel to the user. Okay, so creating that clickable prototype. This is a visual conversation with the client. So as we go through, this is typically occupies about 70% of the whole life cycle is doing this front-end development. And it's really just a recurring series of changes to the thing and asking the customer, like this, is this what you meant? So that we can put something in front of them, let them see it, let them feel it, sit down and use it, is a very important aspect of it, and say, yeah, that'll work for me. This is how I want it to go. And, you know, usually it's a, do you like it like this? And they'll say, well, that would work, but could we do so-and-so? So those questions, this is the really important part, that could we do this question, that usually happens after we've written a whole mess of code and it's really expensive to change, and they say, oh, this is great, but could we do X, happens when it's cheap. We're just changing design. We're not changing all of the guts of a system. Okay, so once we have that design at the end of the front-end process, then we have a very well-defined target that an architect can sit down who's familiar with Fusebox and say, great, this is how we'll create the thing in Fusebox. And it's really at that point that it becomes a Fusebox project per se, okay, when we're starting to talk about how it's going to be coded in Fusebox. Up to that point, we could be targeting anything. I mean, we could be doing a Mach 2 thing. We could be doing just about anything we wanted. The front-end process, that prototyping process, is an absolutely invaluable conversation with the customer. And the hard part about it for developers, and me being the first, is you have to take yourself out of thinking about it in terms of how you're going to write it. You have to think about it in terms of just presenting it to the customer, just how the experience is going to happen, and then worry about how it's going to turn into an application later. Yeah. So that's really how Fusebox is designed to target how do you make a customer realize what they really need, and it's through that kind of iterative graphical conversation. Yeah. Good, great question.
Like I've noticed a lot of burnout among those who have
Right.
On, and it's just like, when can we start coding?
Okay.
You know, it's like, how do you...
So... How do you avoid the getting exasperated with the whole front-end development process in that it does occupy such a large part of the Fusebox lifecycle? One of the answers to that is separating the project into smaller chunks and dealing with them. If you can do that, if you can do them in parallel modules, then you can do them in smaller parts so that you're not taking up, enormous lengths of time on the calendar before you can actually get to doing your coding. And it depends on your shop as well. There are some Fusebox design shops that do no coding at all. I have a good friend who does consulting and design, doesn't write any code. He farms everything out to offshore developers. And on any given project, he may use developers in 3 or 4 different countries. And he just farms out the Fuse docs and... Yeah. He's the architect, he's the controller of the project, and then just the actual writing of the code happens elsewhere. Steve Nelson, anybody visit secretagents.com? You've seen Steve's concept there. You know, his whole concept is you can log in, get an account as a coder. You want to do a little work today, grab a couple fuses, write them up, check them in, and get paid for them on a piecework basis. So, yeah, it's one of the nice things about how Fusebox sets things out that way. Is that it really lets you parcel things out. But in terms of avoiding the burnout inherent to a big project where you're spending a lot of time talking to the customer and doing the non-coding stuff and all the coders are chomping at the bit, two things. You can cut it up into smaller chunks, and while those coders are spinning their wheels, if they're in-house for you and they don't have anything else to do, have them work on putting together tools for managing your projects and things. You know, working on CF and stuff, it's a great thing to do. You know, work on doing the XSL and other things. We have my team uses what we call a pipeline management system. It's called Banzai, for anybody that gets that. Pipeline is just our backlog of work request changes for a large system that we maintain. And it's all written in-house. So we get requests in from the customer. They go in the pipeline, and then I consult with the customer's manager to prioritize everything into planned releases. And then we go through the lifecycle process on each planned release has a small chunk. So instead of feeling like we're in death march mode, we're dealing with small planned releases. Yeah?
Yeah, that leads to my question, which is I just came from the thing I'm attempting to know with Joe Reinhardt, and basically you find by using subversion and track. Mm-hmm. And my question is, if you can get these programs to write batches to make changes to your CBS, why can't you then have it write to your QSTAR? And then you have a record of all the changes that were made on that file, and you could run a report that said, you know, here's the, you know, ongoing work on a bug. That's what I meant by bug.
Why not?
Yeah. That would give you an idea of where you were at a given place.
Absolutely. Why not do something like that? It's a great idea. Yep. Yeah.
You said you weren't big on wrench off logic. What would you say?
Not that I'm against it. It's just that I don't have requirements to be using it now. And so, you know, I haven't really been kind of in that world for a while where I've had customers that formally require, you know, we need a copy of a project file from time to time. We want to see the Gantt chart is generated by project because that's what they're used to seeing and how they're used to formatting it. Absolutely nothing against using project. It's a terrific tool. If you're familiar with it and you're familiar with that terminology of PM, it's a great thing to do. What I'm using at the moment is primarily that in-house pipeline management system that we use and reporting that I do on my own, generated on my own stuff, just because I'm not required to produce Gantt charts and things of that nature. So it's primarily just schedules, and then our customer has a view-only access to our pipeline, so they can stop in any time and see where we are on a specific release and how close we are to releasing for beta and things like that. Yeah. So we find that works really well when they have web access. So, yep, just a second. Adelon from Synthes. I have used it. Haven't used it in quite a while. And I haven't talked to the Synthes guys, so I'm not sure what their status is at this point.
Is there anything like that related to
Right. That's the whole thing from soup to nuts. Not really that manages the whole ball of wax for you. Part of the situation with Fusebox is our following community is very diverse in their approach to things. And so it tends to be small collections of tools that people put together in ways that they feel like they can use them. Early on, we kind of thought about doing some things where we would build this is the tool to use, and it's just kind of the Uber tool and all that kind of stuff. And it didn't really feel right in terms of the community that Fusebox has. So right now, I'm not really aware of anything that does the whole thing. If you have something in mind, there's probably always somebody that's interested in the other mousetrap. Okay. Can you use FuseDocs to generate release notes? Right. Right. You certainly could. Essentially, what I would do is in the properties section, you could add a property tag for the release that particular change is applied to, and then you could go through looking to collect up everything that contributed to a specific release or something like that. And there are a lot of different ways to approach it. I mean, the idea of batching from Subversion to add notes to the FuseDoc and things like that is certainly quite powerful. So there's all kinds of ways to slice it up. Yeah, and it's just text files, so what can you do with it? You had a follow-up. Have I personally dealt with CMMI? No, I haven't. Anything in terms of formalized project management, yes, we can approach. So if there's a particular type of reporting, there's some solution to it because of that great organization that exists in Fusebox. Certainly you could approach that. What I would recommend in doing that, whether it's CMMI or whatever the management framework within which you're operating is, the way to approach creating style sheets is to figure out what you want and then think about how you can create a style sheet to generate that. So what I would say is, what data do you need for that particular management question? Where does it exist within your Fusebox application? So is it in circuit files? Is it in FuseDocs? And then the final answer is, what style sheets can I create in order to turn that XML data into the finished report? So, okay. But I have not personally worked with CMMI, so I'll say, yes, we can do anything given enough time and money. Great. Other things? Super. Okay. Just a quick reminder, the site is grokfusebox.com, G-R-O-K, fusebox.com. And you want to pop into Grok's goodies, both of those items are there to download. I know so because I had to move to a backup PC today, and I had downloaded everything and put it on this machine for you today. So it's there and it works. So if there are no other questions, then thank you all for coming, and I hope you enjoyed it. Oh, and don't forget to fill out your evaluation form as you leave. That's very important.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.